morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Whatever time it is, wherever you are when you are listening, welcome to the Monsters and Friends podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to the cryptids, legends, and lore that might not get the same attention as their more famous counterparts. I am your host, Michael Patrick, and I am super excited to finally be back and ready to rumble. There's a bit of a difference this season as we are not coming to you from our normal location, which was a beautiful little cabin nestled deep in the woods. It was near a river. There was deer. Oh, it was gorgeous. Rather, though, this time around, we come to you from our campsite outside of this lovely Winnebago here to bring you season 2 of the Monsters and Friends podcast. What is different about it, Mike, you might ask yourself? Well, let me tell you. This season, Barry and I have decided to hit the open road. It was a lot of fun in the cabin, kicking back with our feet by the fire, sipping on some warm cider, but now we have decided that there are so many different cryptids, legends, and lore out there that we are going to go state to state, and we're going to find them and bring them to you, the wonderful masses. Each episode, we're going to tell you about a few of the different cryptids, legends, and lore that each state has to offer, and we'll give you a little bit of an insight about who they are or where they came from. And I know, we've been on a bit of a break for a while, but we've been on the road trying to track down some pretty elusive creatures that are just really difficult to get a hold of. Apparently, the skunk ape doesn't get very good reception down there in the Everglades, so as you can imagine, tracking down some of these creatures and different things, it just gets a bit tricky. But have no fear, we're here in the old Winnebago traveling from spot to spot to bring you the story of some different monsters and their friends. You know, this country is just one big ball of strange. From roadside attractions like the Fountain of Youth in Delaware to the world's most scenic urinal in Hawaii, there is a lot throughout this wonderful, wacky country of ours. The issue, though, is that we don't always get to see everything, and some of the more weird, scary, or creepy things just get passed by. We spend so much time talking about cryptids like Bigfoot and the Mothman that there are so many other weird and unique things that go unnoticed. This season, on the Monsters and Friends podcast, we are going to do our best to change some of that. And because we've been gone for a while, we're going to go ahead and dive right into this week's travel. On episode numero uno of our second season, we're going to go ahead and travel on to the Tar Heel State. This week on the Monsters and Friends podcast, the Winnebago is heading to North Carolina. But before we get into it, let's hear a word from our sponsors. And we're back. If you want to sponsor us, just give me a call. Dunkin' Donuts, I'm looking at you. We're going to dive right into the Tar Heel State with a little tale that seems to be present in a lot of different states. The people of America really like naming things, and it seems like the creepier it is, the better it is. North Carolina is no exception, and it has quite a few places that sound kind of creepy. It has Devil's Rock, Devil's Courthouse, Seven Devils, Kill, Devil Hill, and of course, Devil's Elbow. I'd say it's safe to assume that North Carolina really has a thing about naming stuff with the word devil in it. To start out our trip through North Carolina, we're going to explore one of these amazing devil places. Our first stop takes us to the woods near Bear Creek. This place is somewhere that's known to not only house the devil's elbow, knees, and head, it's known to the local people as the devil's tramping ground. Now, this seems to be a pretty popular camping spot, but the more I read about it, very few people have actually ventured to stay there. It's located on private ground, so generally you need to ask permission to go and stay there, but, you know, before I even really get into this, though, I should probably tell you what the Devil's Tramping Ground really is. So, like I said, it's something that's a little interesting. The Devil's Tramping Ground is a small clearing in the woods near Bear Creek, North Carolina. It's a spot in the woods that got its name because there's a barren circle on the ground about 40 feet round, almost perfectly, where nothing is reported to grow. It's a big empty circle that's surrounded by fairly dense forest, so it sticks out pretty well. Legend dictates that this is the very spot in which old Satan himself can rise from the fiery recesses of hell and come into our world. However, he's not just able to leave the area and visit the nearest Waffle House. Instead, he rises from the depths and paces the area contemplating his next big plague or J-Lo movie that he plans on unleashing upon humankind. He walks circles in the area, and that is what has caused this ring to not be able to grow or sustain any life within it. There haven't really ever been reports of anyone seeing the devil himself in this area, but there are a lot of other weird, pretty creepy things that have happened. People have claimed that if you take an object and you leave it within the ring overnight, when you return, it will be gone and either just never be seen again, or more commonly appears that it's been thrown pretty violently from inside of the circle into the surrounding area around it. It's also a place that our four-legged friends really seem to hate. There's one story where a gentleman visiting the area said his dog absolutely refused to go near the open area. It yipped and it barked as the guy tried to drag it over towards it. Finally, the pair retreated after the dog exercised his know-how in canine tugonomics, and they got the heck out of there. People have stayed at the site overnight, but claim that once you do, you're changed. There's something that's different about you. Something just isn't the same. Maybe old Lucifer himself came up and bopped them on the head or made a little wager for their souls. It's also said that this is a premier destination for some cults. They come here and they pay tribute to the Hoofed One himself, and some people have claimed that when they visit, they see cloaked shadows peering at them from the woods. Perhaps some of the devil's minions are still making sure that their overlord rises each and every night with little to no interruption. But what causes this lack of vegetation? It's really difficult to say, but there are many different theories, of course. One such theory is that this was the site of a battle between two Native American tribes. It was so bloody that the bloodshed left the ground soaked so thoroughly that nothing could ever grow there again. It's also thought that the tribe that lost actually made their way from the mainland and they settled out in the Outer Banks, and they became a little tribe known as the Croatoans. This name probably sounds familiar if you're familiar with lore, because that's the tribe that helped out the lost colonists at Roanoke. All in all, it's a pretty fun story, right? There's also some more traditional stories, such as this site was once an area where a UFO landed. When the UFO touched down, it left enough residual radiation that absolutely nothing can grow inside of its landing pad. More recently, it's been believed that this is potentially a spot that is an anchor for something called Magdalene Crystal Column of Energy. Cliff's notes with this, it's a theory that the planet is surrounded by a web of divine Ma rays, and it sends energy down into the Earth, and that this is an anchor spot for that energy. There's also some that believe that there's a more scientific explanation for this. Some believe that the circle is actually formed by a large, naturally forming salt lick that's not super uncommon around the Carolinas. It's said that the salt content in the ground is what keeps the area barren. It's also been said that there may be large amounts of copper in the soil as well. These are things that would definitely inhibit plant growth, but thanks to modern studies, it's been proven wrong. And some tests have actually shown the land is actually quite fertile. There really goes that idea. Either way, we do know that this is an area that really boggles the mind. It has a weird magnetic signature. There have been traces of some radiation found there. And it just seems like a good place to do some devil brooding. So until you tell me otherwise, in my opinion, this is the birthplace of the awful movie Geely. And this is a place where the devil himself comes and actually visits. For our next stop, we head to a small town in southeastern North Carolina called Bladenboro. This is one of the better known stories from North Carolina, but I don't think it gets the notoriety that it probably deserves. Pretty well known throughout the area, and there's actually a yearly celebration to celebrate it, This creature is called the Beast of Bladenborough. In the winter of 1953, a creature terrorized the small town and attempted to empty it of its dog population. It all started on the evening of December 29th when a woman heard a neighbor's dog barking and whimpering, so she went outside to see what all the fuss was about. When she exited her home, she scared something off that skulked back into the woods. When asked what it looked like, she described it as a large, cat-like creature. The beast only took 2 days, though, before it actually claimed its first recorded victims. On New Year's Eve, the local police chief was called out to the farm of a gentleman named Woody Storm. Woody's two dogs had been killed by something out there. The wounds on the animals indicated that this creature was something large and very powerful, and it had actually completely drained the dogs of all of their blood. For the next week or so, reports came in from all over the small town indicating that something was attacking and, in some cases, killing their dogs. All of the dogs that had been killed had been either dragged off into the woods, or if they had been left behind, like the first occurrence, all of their blood was completely drained. The creature was described by those that had seen it as being about 3 feet long, 20 inches high, and having the face of a cat. People said that the creature looked like a bear or a panther, but nobody said it looked like cat dog, though. On January 5th, however, things changed as the Beast of Bladenborough turned its focus away from the four-legged canines of the area and turned its attention towards the human population. That evening, a woman named C.E. Kinslaw heard the sounds of a dog whimpering outside of her home. She went outside to see what the noise was and saw a large, cat-like creature rush at her. As it approached, she let out a blood-curdling scream that grabbed her husband's attention and brought him outside. Perhaps seeing the creature was overmatched, it bolted back into the woods. She reported that the beast looked like a large mountain lion. This completely and totally scared the bejeebies out of the local community, and people actually stopped going outside after dark. Now, this doesn't seem like a huge issue until you realize that at this point in time, a lot of these homes were outside of city limits, and they had outside facilities for doing your business. So imagine going out there to drop a number two and being worried about whether or not this creature was going to eat your face off. Doesn't sound very fun. At this point, though, what the townspeople seemed best to be done was to call on local hunters to come into the community and hunt down this creature and end the chaos. It's reported that over 600 men descended upon the town and attempted to catch or kill the Beast of Bladenborough. The real issue here, though, is that no one really knew what they were hunting. They had an idea of what this creature was, but nobody had a very specific description or any ideas of where it hung out or where it lived. On January 13th, however, the hunt was called off as a large bobcat was trapped by a local farmer, and this was declared to be the Beast of Bladenborough. How do we know, you ask? Well, it was hung in the center of town with a large sign reading, "This is the Beast of Bladenborough." Things went back to normal, and no one was really any wiser. However, there are quite a few people that don't believe that this, in fact, was the creature. There are a few different ideas and stories about what the beast really was. And of course, there's always the accepted one of it being a large bobcat that was killed, but it didn't match a lot of the descriptions of the creature. Many believe that Bob, which is what the locals refer to him as, was actually a Carolina panther, which many people believe had gone extinct about 100 years previous. Many argue that it couldn't be as, you know, the whole extinct thing, but have you ever been to the Appalachian Mountains? I bet a creature could survive there pretty well unknown for 100 years. There's enough thicket and just enough land where it could probably survive and thrive off of the land, with people being completely unaware. Another theory is that the Beast of Bladenborough was actually a German Shepherd hound mixed named Big Boy. A gentleman named A.R. Stanton claimed to have given a young Native American boy that had lived in the area this dog. Stanton said that the dog could jump over a 6-foot tall fence, and he was known to kill some chickens in the area from time to time. While Stanton raised the dog from a pup, he also had said on a few occasions that If he had ever run into him in the woods, instead of trying to pet him, he'd probably be prone to killing him. I think that says a lot. So maybe the Beast of Bladenboro was someone's just disgruntled lapdog. What is the Beast? According to history, it's a very pissed off bobcat that had a penchant for killing dogs with reckless abandon. This was a bobcat that drained them of all their blood, right? Maybe it was a creature long thought extinct that managed to survive in the woods of Appalachia. Whatever it was, it terrorized this small town for a few terrible weeks. There is so much more that we could explore through our journey in North Carolina, but we're going to be making one final stop. We're going to go ahead and take some time off and kick our feet up and float around in beautiful Lake Norman. We're going to head down there and take a look for Normie, the Lake Norman lake monster. Normie, oh Normie. This lake monster is a real bit of a mystery. He's a bit different as well than his lake monster counterparts such as Nessie or even Champ, in the fact that he's probably nowhere near as old. What do you mean? Well, it's because Lake Norman is a relatively recent addition to the North Carolina landscape. It was built by the Duke Power Company and completed in 1964. The lake is fed by the Catawba River and utilized the water to create hydroelectric power for the local region by fueling the reactors for some of the local nuclear power plants. Now, keep those plants in mind because they may come back into play later on in our Normie story. Lake Norman covers something like 500 square miles and isn't all too deep. On average, it's about a touch over 33 feet deep, but there are a few spots that are well over 100 feet. I think the deepest part of it is about 112 feet. So it's not a very deep lake like Loch Ness or even Lake Champlain. The interesting thing about Normie is that while he's a beloved character in the area, there's not a whole lot known about the aquatic beast. The first reported sightings of Normie came around 1996. So he's not really super old, and this legend really doesn't go back that far. Some reports, though, list that Normie has the head of a dog, glowing red eyes, and the body of a serpent. Others have said that it looks more like a giant mutated alligator. I also saw a report that said he just looked like a really big fish. If you Google Normie, there's a lot of different sightings and descriptions of the creature. There aren't many pictures of Normie, but don't think the lake monster is shy by any means. One of Normie's favorite pastimes is chasing boats and terrorizing anyone that happens to swim in the waters near him. There was one report of a scuba diver in Lake Norman that reported while on a dive in one of the deeper parts of the lake, he had an up-close and personal experience with Normie. But Normie isn't really a happy-go-lucky sea creature like his character is. He attacked the diver and managed to get a fin off of the man. The man lost the fin of the creature and to the depth, but he managed to escape intact with his life. Another encounter saw a person riding a jet ski through the lake get up and close and personal with Normie. Normie surfaced right in front of the jet ski and sneaked a little peek of the man and his machine. As it came closer, it bumped the man's leg and left a slimy, gross substance that caused the guy to have a reaction and to create a rash. The only thing these two encounters provide are more questions than answers. If you head to LakeNormanMonster.com, you can actually read through many different sightings that people have claimed to have had with the lake creature throughout the years. There are dozens of sightings on the website, and if you have time, please go ahead and have a read. Some of these are actually quite fun. What is Normie, though? It seems pretty apparent that the age-old dinosaur left over in a lake thing really doesn't apply in this situation. I mean, the lake was a flooded town, really. There's more likely to be a George Clooney, oh brother, we're out there haunting here than a lake monster, right? Here are a few of the theories about Normie. Remember how I mentioned that nuclear power plant? One of my personal favorites states that Normie experienced the Ninja Turtle treatment. The theory states that the nuclear power plant had sent sludge and toxic chemicals into the lake since it's opened. Someone released an alligator into the lake, and it mixed with the sludge, and then bam! It became a giant man-eating alligator that actually hasn't eaten anyone to this point. It's a potentially terrifying situation, but really there's not a whole lot of evidence to it. Another theory I saw was that this is more of a mythical creature. It lived beneath the land, and when the power company destroyed the area to make way for the lake, it woke up the creature, and now it swims around Lake Norman looking to take its revenge and protect the local wildlife from the treachery of the evil Duke Energy. That one is a bit far-fetched, even for this gullible podcast host, but you know what? It sounds really exciting. The most feasible explanation that I've discovered, though, is that Normie is no more than a large fish. Normie may perhaps be a gar or a catfish. Have you ever seen a gar? There have been reports of gar as long as 8 feet long being caught in Lake Norman, and if you've ever seen one, they're huge and terrifying. It's possible that this is actually just a simple case of misidentification, more so than it is some sort of mystical creature, but again, like I always say, who really knows? What we do know, though, is that North Carolina has a lot to offer. There's quite a bit to see, and if you just do a quick Google search, you're going to find out a whole lot more. I'm sure I'm forgetting some of the bigger ones, but these are the ones that we thought would be fun. But as we continue the journey around the states, we'll be sharing with you three of the monsters, legends, and lore that we think are interesting. If there's another creature that you're interested in, let us know. If you think there's someone that we let off and you think should be really well known, let us know and we'll put it up on the blog. We love when you interact and tell us how amazing we are, right? We're so great. And there are quite a few ways that you can do that, too. If you have Twitter, make sure to give us a follow over at MNFPod. Instagram, got that, too. On there, you can add us at Monsters and Friends, or even just search for Monsters and Friends on Facebook, and you can become a fan of the page there, too. Or, if you're feeling real old school, go ahead and send us an email at monstersandfriends@gmail.com. Now, this is really important to remember. It's the letter N, not and. Monsters, letter N, friends. Don't write letter, though. That would be weird. But most importantly, more so than any of all this other stuff, please make sure that you hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast from. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, Uncle Roman's Podcast Bonanza, and Google Podcasts. But in all actuality, you can find the podcast almost anywhere. But for now, you can definitely find me putting out the fire and heading back into the old Winnie there to get some rest. So until next time, folks, thanks so much for visiting, and we'll chat again real soon.